Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday Happier Happy Hour. And Dom, it gets happier right now. We're joined live via StreamYard by former U.S. attorney, friend of the Devil's Advocates, host of the Morning Cannolis, Jim Santel. Welcome back, Jim. It's been too long, sir.
Hey, Jim.
It has been much too long, but glad to be with you today, as always.
I cannot believe the news is... from the House of Representatives has somehow eclipsed the news of Donald Trump, the legal travails of the former president. I barely even know what's going on in the trial. Jim, first let me get your comments on the House of Representatives. As a citizen of this nation, sir, what's your opinion?
My opinion is that our Congress is not doing its job, right? We are at a time in America where we don't have a Speaker of the House, and as a result of that, no legislation can go forward, and that includes on things like, oh, say, for example, education and immigration and healthcare and violence from guns, all those kinds of things. But putting aside that problem, we're also at a time in our nation's history when we really don't have a budget, and about 4 weeks from now, that's going to go away again, too. We've got this continuing resolution. This is traumatic, it is dramatic, and it is almost, it in some ways is unprecedented, but almost beyond belief. This is plainly not what founding fathers anticipated, and at the risk of being a little bit too serious about this, because hopefully at some point the Republicans will get their act together, the reality is that the government is not working today, and it hasn't been working for a week. And that is a reason for all citizens, including the three of us and others listening this afternoon, to be hugely concerned. This is not the way it's supposed to work. We should require and we should expect much better.
Well, counselor, it's been 10 days or more, but who's counting? And it is unprecedented in that the U.S. has never unseated a sitting speaker through a motion to vacate. And constitutionally speaking, Jim, clarify for the people, the House is different than the executive branch. You know, if a president dies, there's a vice president, there's succession. But this body does not function without a speaker, if I understand it, sir.
That's exactly right. It has to do with internal rules of the House of Representatives. If you go to the Congress, you won't find that here. Section 1 of the Article 1 and Section 1 of Article 1 describes what the United States House of Representatives and Congress, of course, the Senate as well, is supposed to do. This particular aspect of it is not there because these are rules adopted by the House of Representatives and the Congress generally as a part of its functioning. What that means, of course, we recall this way back in January when we didn't have a speaker and took 10 days, again, as you indicated, for the former, now former speaker to get not only nominated but ultimately confirmed. Nothing happens. And what that means is that new Congresswomen and Congressmen are not sworn in. There is no legislation going forward. Yes, the staffs are still there working on those kinds of things. But again, important things like, oh, say once again, some needed assistance to Israel, some needed support for a place called Ukraine, those kinds of things. None of that is happening. And again, it's not a constitutional crisis. That's not what this is. It is an administrative and functioning crisis that, again, needs to be remedied, but it is a source of great concern for all of us, and it should be.
Jim, I hate to linger in the House of Representatives. Some would describe it as in disarray, others as anarchy amongst the Republicans, or a civil war, as we heard Hakeem Jeffries, the actual leader of the Democratic caucus. Jim, George Santos, this singular member of Congress, has received new indictments this week. And I guess we've got a Democrat that got some new indictments as well. But I want to talk about Santos because he's in the mix. He's voting for the next Speaker of the House. Should he not be expelled from the House? He literally is now being alleged to have stolen the identities of others and stolen money, even perhaps from the Republican Party, Jim. If that doesn't get you thrown out of the caucus, what does?
What does indeed? Again, new problems, not that he doesn't have old problems, but new problems for George Santos. This is on top of the prior corruption indictment that we talked about not too long ago. This one, as you said, you got it just right. Among other things, he's using a donor's credit card number to transfer about $11,000 to his own bank account. Apparently, according to the allegations, swindled about $50,000 from two other donors using a fake nonprofit entity, and he used the money to buy designer goods and settle some personal debts. That you can't do, and that's in violation of federal law, and the prosecutors, again in New York, have identified that in a superseding indictment, adding more counts to the previous indictment. And yet he is remaining there in Congress. He is defiant. He apparently told someone, I have to check my phone, but I'm not resigning anytime soon. And so he is there, and he has got the, I hate to say it, he's got the right to vote on all this, including the next speaker. This man, again, should be expelled, should be, his time in the United States House of Representatives should conclude. We always hasten to add that he is presumed innocent until proven guilty. But these charges are pretty compelling, and they're very specific in the indictments, past and present. George Santos just continues to have this long life, and it is in part because the leadership there permits him to have that long life. Under any other circumstance, anybody else in a position of responsibility and authority, inside or outside government, would be long gone, fired by their supervisors.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of the devil's advocate. Good to see you, Jim. Thanks for coming around, man. Let's get caught up, man. You know, Donald Trump was in New York last week, decided to skip out this week. Word is maybe he'll go back next week when Cohen, the former fixer, testifies. But I want to go talk about what happened this week. Weisselberg was up on the stand, seemed like he didn't give some information or was conflicted, perhaps. Didn't know who signed off on the financials that, you know, gave Deutsche Bank cover to give him all sorts of great loans. Jim, what was your sense of how everything went down with Weisselberg and the Trump civil fraud trial in the state of New York this week?
Right. And once again, this has to do with valuations of properties, right? Again, you got it just right, Dom. This is an allegation, a civil lawsuit, but again, seeking about $250 million and preventing Donald Trump and others from ever again handling anything related to corporations in New York. Other remedies the attorney general there is also seeking. We've had a number of so-called inside people testifying already, including, as you said, Weisselberg, perhaps the most notorious among the group. He has already, as we know, been found guilty in a federal case. And so he's got that hanging over him as well. And again, in a situation, I think this is the reason why most people were scratching their heads or at least cross-examining him as they did. As everybody was doing to some extent, both prosecutors and defense counsel. This is a man in a relatively small corporation, against large in terms perhaps of its assets, maybe. But in terms of personnel, number of people involved, this is not hundreds of people. You would anticipate then not only would the CFO, which is what he was, arguably still is, would know more about what he is talking about. And again, as you indicated, saying during the course of his testimony that he doesn't recall exactly who signed off on what. Well, again, we all know from other testimony, including what Michael Cohen will say next week, Donald Trump was in charge of everything. And so it may not be a basis for a perjury charge, but this is Alan Weisselberg trying to have it both ways, trying basically to still satisfy his former boss while also trying to keep himself out of hot water, if you will. You can't have both. Again, it's messy testimony. It's not going to exonerate Donald Trump in any way. This, again, is a very compelling case. We already know Judge Engoron in this case has found that he did, in fact, commit the fraud. The question now is just how much money does he pay and how does this intent get transferred to Donald Trump? That's what this trial is all about.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We got a fine guest. He's Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of the Morning Cannolis My understanding is, Jim, here's a question. Weisselberg, as a witness, is still receiving massive compensation. My understanding from the Trump organization, there is definitely financial motive for him not to cross the boss. They paid him like $2 million. While this has been going on, Jim, shouldn't that be pointed out, or am I just unaware of all the happenings in the courtroom, but shouldn't that be part of Letitia James' presentation? And could he be impeached as a witness? Is he there on behalf of the prosecution or the defense?
Right. And the answer is yes, yes, and yes to all of those very good questions. This is a guy who arguably is a prosecution witness, a defense witness, depending upon what comes out of his mouth. That's clearly the case. But those issues related to bias, the reason why, again, in this case, there's not a jury. This is the judge deciding this portion of the case. And he will wisely take into account what has been noted previously in pretrial proceedings, is a part of this trial as well, that Weisselberg is still on the payroll of what? Of the Trump Corporation, still being paid by the very people who are in trial for civil fraud. That's a huge, huge basis for attacking his testimony, again, from all sides, and suggesting to the extent that he is minimizing the involvement of Donald Trump and the corporation itself in these problems with related to valuations of properties. That's the reason to be suspect of the things that he is saying, that again suggests that these valuation problems were not really all problems at all. And again, that Donald Trump had very little involvement in them. It's a tough thing for, I've been there for my own situation in some financial cases. We've got an insider. You need to have them there because they do provide some significant information, but you also want to be arm's length from them. And you want to let the judge and the jury know, in this case, a judge, that you're not embracing everything this fellow says. And that's also a reason to have credibility inside the jury. You don't have to believe everything this guy says, just those pieces that support your case.
Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. We got a fine guest. He's sticking around. He's Jim Santel, host of the Morning Cannolis. Counselor, you are sticking around, aren't you?
I absolutely. Would I leave early? Absolutely not.
Well, you know, perhaps getting an early start on your homework, sir. You know, we like to cheat off your paper, so give us all the good stuff. But leave a little on the bone for the audience in the morning. The Morning Cannolis, 9 to 11. Jim Santel sticking around. More Devil's Advocates. You stick around as well.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
And welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis on the Civic Media Network, 9-11 on Saturdays. That's AM, folks. Joining us, Jim, thanks for sticking around. Lots of stuff to get caught up on. Let's get back to Georgia. Let's go to Georgia. We got some cases coming up. What, this month?
Jeez, bro!
Cheese bro and the Kraken lady, right. And there's been a lot of back and forth, a lot of attempts to delay or toss out. Man, what's your sense of how this is going? And you think we're going to stick to the dates that have been identified so far?
Right. As you know well, and as listeners to this fine program have noted, I've always been skeptical that these early trial dates will stick. And I will talk again on the morning that a jury is impaneled and sworn in, then we'll know it's actually going ahead. And so the shorter, maybe the long answer to your good question, Dom, is we will see whether this happens. Again, but what has happened here under the Speedy Trial Act in Georgia? Again, this is Fani Willis's case against 19 defendants, two of them exercising their right to a speedy trial, and so wanting to have their case heard immediately. And she said, "We'll go ahead." And she wants to do everybody together. That's not going to happen. But they want to go ahead, and so right now it's still on the calendar. Whether that happens again, because of the judges continuing having to entertain motions and other procedural requests, those things can always bump a trial days, sometimes weeks. And it's appropriate for defendants to pursue their appropriate remedies in court. So I don't in any way fault the defense counsel for doing that, but just indicate that it doesn't always result in a truly speedy trial, certainly according to the rules of the state of Georgia. But these two, again, two lawyers charged among the 19 with engaging in different kinds of things there in Georgia. We know Sidney Powell, perhaps more notoriously, hanging around with Rudy Giuliani a lot during previous years. Chesbrough, a little bit less significant, but probably one of the principal authors of this memorandum, this Wisconsin memorandum, other things that basically set forth a mechanism for trying to overthrow the election nationally and then also in Georgia, is what Fannie Willis is alleging he did. So no small thing. And also both of them, of course, like everybody else, charged with RICO, the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organization Act, basically a crime organization put together for the purpose of accomplishing a crime, in this case, trying to undermine and steal votes of Georgians from the way they should properly be counted.
Jim,
Go ahead, Curry. Go ahead.
Chesbrough, in the documents filed, my understanding is the Wisconsin false electors and the videotape of the perhaps conversation they had that day in the Wisconsin State Capitol, December 14th of 2020. My understanding, that has been placed in the document. I'm not clear if that's at Chesbrough's request or at the request of Fannie Willis in the prosecution, but I sure can't wait for that, Jim. That basically exposes the 10 false electors, many of them Wisconsin party officials, one of them a Wisconsin elections commissioner. Talking to you, Bob Spindell.
Absolutely. And so, yes, this item shows up on the exhibit list. And that means that it is fair game for, frankly, one side, both sides to introduce this into evidence. It would be fascinating to watch, especially since, as we know, the judge there, those proceedings are being televised. So presumably they've got the technology to pipe that into all of our video streams and even television sets, those kinds of things. And so highly likely that we will see that at some point. Plainly, the indictment there features Wisconsin fairly prominently. It's among other states there, Pennsylvania and others. But the Wisconsin connection is not in any way subtle in that indictment. And so she is alleging that what happened here in Wisconsin is a part of this overall scheme. That's where you get the RICO aspect of this, the Corrupt Organization Act. And we may well see what actually happened again, as you indicate, on December 14th, Mike, when these folks got together to commit what I believe are both federal crimes and, yes, state crimes as well, that should be prosecuted. And again, the false electors, fake electors in Georgia, those are being prosecuted. We also know in Michigan, across the pond here, we've got an attorney general there is prosecuting the fake electors here in Wisconsin. And we talked about last Saturday morning, and we'll talk about it again tomorrow morning, are also, I believe, very much subject to criminal prosecution here in the state of Wisconsin, and also, yes, by Jack Smith. You can have both federal and state charges. All of that should be on the table. I hope it is. As the governor in the state of Wisconsin has said, he hopes that they are brought to justice, they're held accountable. Let's follow up and make that happen.
Jim, Chesbrough and Powell set to go to trial on October 23rd. That's 10 days, man. Again, given the timing, maybe not that day, but you think realistically within a few days, maybe a week of that?
I think probably so, unless there is something huge, unless, you know, there's something, you know, and another event happening in the South today. We had Eileen Cannon in the federal documents case getting kind of upset and saying, I'm not deciding this right now. If you have something inside this, again, this obviously is the state case in Georgia, in Fulton County, different jurisdiction, a different setting there entirely, unless there's something really significant. There is suddenly a motion, for example, to suggest that the entire indictment for some reason is unfounded, unless there's some major piece of evidence that the judge, unlikely he's going to do it, but were to prohibit the prosecution from introducing, then there could be arguably an interlocutory appeal. Do you want to preserve that ability to do that? I don't see any of that happening. So the small things I'm talking about are things related to witness testimony, availability, and maybe even some of the scheduling on it. But I think you're right. I think you're right, Dom. Probably, again, much to my surprise, I think this will go ahead.
All right. Another thing, the Jack Smith in Washington, D.C. apparently filed a motion in Trump's D.C. trial to protect jurors from dangerous speech and post motion for fair and protective jury procedures. Jim, what does that mean and why is he doing it?
Right. Because Donald Trump has this habit and this practice and this tradition of doing just that, threatening people on Truth Social, threatening people out there. I tell him all kinds of things that could have an impact upon the delivery of justice in that case. That's why Jack Smith is asking the judge to tell him to knock it off.
Jim Santella, can't wait for the morning cannolis, 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Network. Don't forget to tune in for Jim. Jim, thank you for joining us here on the Devil's Advocates.
Thanks,
Tom. Oh, it's a pleasure, gentlemen. Have a good weekend. Take care.
Well, last chance for your grievances. Then our sports reporter, Mike Clemens, dialed right now, 844.
The Devil's Advocates. Sausage making never looked so good.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, rolling through the Friday happier happy hour. Always happy when Jim Santel comes around. Too bad not in person. He usually brings the cannolis.
He literally does.
You got to tune in on Saturday mornings for the morning cannolis, 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Network. And just in case you miss it, we replay it for you for your convenience. Two opportunities to listen to Jim Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Network. We're going to take some of your phone calls. Time for your grievances because we got a fine sports hit from our sports reporter, Mike Clemens, going to talk some Badgers, some Brandon Woodruff. That's not good news for the Brewers. Bad shoulder and all. Anyways, Mike, coming up soon, your calls could be next, 844-967-2789. But Dom, I want to throw a conversational topic, a grievance, if you will, out there. The wanker, Scott Walker, the former gubernator of the state of Wisconsin, you know, last heard from getting sworn at a Packer Raiders game in Las Vegas.
In Vegas, yeah.
And since the Hamas has attacked Israel, this guy is, he wants you to know he is wrapping himself in the Israeli flag. Well, a day ago, Dom, he's tweeting out pictures of him and Bibi Netanyahu, you know, selfies of him and Bibi. And then there is this statement, siding with Hamas is like saying some people did something on 9/11. They're siding with terrorists. We should hold every one of them accountable, from Marxist Black Lives Matter to radical college students and professors. Expose them all. Their actions must have consequences, according to Scott Walker. And, you know, he is the president of the, what is it, the Young Adolphs Foundation?
I believe it's the Young Americas Foundation.
I always screw that up. But
it's very tough. I get it. I see where, you know, the disconnect could come, Crudy, but just so you know, I'm here for your memory.
So I'm over on the Twitter, I still call it that. And Scotty Wanker, the wanker, you know, to help the young people clearly know where they stand on this issue. Well, he's offering the YAF stickers, stands with Israel. YAF stands with Israel, just so all the kids know. And then, you know, the Israeli flag emblazoned in the bottom right corner with the YAF.org, you know, in case you want to give them a few bucks for the effort.
I mean, isn't it the Republicans? It didn't, who was it? It was the head of the Republican Party. What's her name?
Rona
this
McDaniel?
Is good for, yeah, yeah, this is a great opportunity for Republicans.
But when you,
I mean, if that's your sense, if your first sense is to, you know, go out and try to, you know, get some, you know, promo stickers. I mean, really, really? And there's no nuance to it, Scott Walker? Really? Yeah. Historically speaking, that's just it. I mean, come on. This is a quick grab. They're trying to, you know, get the headlines to get people to look at their thing.
It's not appropriation if you use the flag and then only put your organizational .org in the bottom corner of the flag on the field of the flag. It's like, you know, putting the Devil's Advocates on the American flag. I'm sure No one would be offended by that.
You know, I'm not clear on all the flag etiquette, but that might be not appropriate.
I don't find this sticker YAF stands with Israel with a YAF.org on the Israeli flag. I'm not Jewish, but Scott Walker, well, he's Jewish adjacent, wants you to know he stands with the Israelis. He's got a picture of him and his Jewish friend, Bibi Netanyahu. And
there's more.
The young Adolfs are bringing a kid to campus, and there's a new announcement out there. Their one Jewish friend's coming to campus. It's not Bibi Netanyahu. It's Righty Whitey Ben Shapiro.
Oh, great.
And he's going coming to UW Madison. Coming to
Madison.
Dominic, here is the reporting from WMTV. Conservative commentator Ben Shapiro is stopping at UW-Madison next month. The Young Young Americans for Freedom, that's the YAF, at UW-Madison announced the event Wednesday, noting the Daily Wire emeritus editor will appear as part of a lecture series on November 6th.
It sounds so formal. Ooh, the Daily Wire emeritus editor. Yeah, it's Ben Shapiro. He says a lot of crazy crap. That guy.
Dominic, the event will begin at 7 p.m. and will be held.
Can I be the devil's advocate?
Sure.
Emeritus editor.
Shannon Hall Memorial Union. Go nuts. I'm just trying to make a public service announcement for those that might want to attend the Shapiro speech.
Hosted by the Young
Adolfs Foundation or whatever it's called.
Organizers expect there to be a large turnout for Shapiro's lecture, so there will be a standby line for unregistered people who would like to attend. The event is free, and those who would like to go should register online. They have a link at the NBC15.com website. UW-Madison YAF Chairman Harrison Wells said the organization is excited to host the event. Ben Shapiro's presence on campus will encourage a rich exchange of ideas that broaden our campus's understanding of free speech. Wow. So the kids on campus don't quite get free speech until you bring a guy like Shapiro on. Yeah, gotcha. Thanks for that.
Dominica, a little more, because I actually clicked through. And first and foremost, as mentioned, Ben Shapiro at UW-Madison, the date, Monday, November 6th, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Location, Wisconsin Union Theater, Shannon Hall. But sadly, Dom, this event, it's a sellout, they claim. Although there's no cost for tickets, there's no tickets available, they claim. But then they also post this is being organized by the UW-Madison Young Americans for Freedom. You know how many followers they've got on Facebook, Dom? These Young Americans for Freedom, UW-Madison chapter.
How many?
32.
They have 32 followers, and the event is booked out. How many protesters and anti-Ben Shapiro, anti-Scott Walker folks you think may have, got some of those tickets?
You think there might be a few plants in the audience, then?
I mean, is it a plant? I don't know, plant. If you want to go and hear what Mr. Shapiro has to say, to hear what Young America's Foundation chapter at UW-Madison, what Young Americans for Freedom have to say about it.
Dominic, a ticket does not guarantee entry and is revocable. They do say the event is free and open to the public, but they do claim they're sold out. Let me click that details tab. This event has sold out online. No longer available. Well, it was just announced. Must be a big draw, this Ben Shapiro, whippersnapper of conservative causes.
I just want to be clear, because I'm not seeing a specific line. I mean, certainly the Young Americans for Freedom at UW-Madison sounds a lot like Young America's Foundation. Do we know that these groups are, in fact, tied together, that they're related? I'm not seeing it in the reporting. I'm just making an assumption. I have to infer it. 844-967-2789. Ben Shapiro, no matter who's bringing him, he's coming to the UW-Madison campus, and they're going to teach you all about free speech. I think perhaps Shapiro showing up in Madison will learn a few things about free speech. 844-967-2789.
It says, although it is blinking here at me, I did go through to their Twitter page, Dom. Wisconsin YAF, Young Americans for Freedom. They got a little for freedom, but they are the ones bringing the Ben Shapiro to campus, Wisconsin YAF. They've got, oh, my bad. Here on Twitter, they've got 916 followers, but on the Ben Shapiro organization page, you know, where it's sold out, they only represent having 32 followers. Just saying.
I just, you know, I don't want to, you know, give credence to the Young Americas Foundation with Scott Walker, if that's not in fact the case. And so, folks, you're going to have to do a little digging if you wonder who the true sponsors are. We know it is Young Americans for Freedom on the University of Wisconsin campus that will be bringing Shapiro here.
And they claim there's also a Ted Cruz event coming to UW-Madison. Did I miss that? That was October 13th. When is that? That's today? Ted Cruz on campus today?
What? Oh, come on.
New location. Senator Ted Cruz and Daily Wire host Michael Knowles at UW-Madison. Hey, do you want to see Ted Cruz tonight? I was completely unaware. This has not been a well-publicized event. It's right around the corner from me here, Dom. The Wisconsin Masonic Temple Center, my bad, 301 Wisconsin Avenue, the Wisconsin Masonic Center will feature Verdict with Ted Cruz live at UW-Madison. That event, oh, never mind. That was a couple of years ago.
Oh, come on. See, you know,
it was October 13th, but they've still got it. Website, dude. I can only go what's at the top of their website.
People are following it, man. You know, take it for what it is.
To this day, on their own website, they've got 33 followers. That's what they are claiming their followership is. That's YAF UW-Madison, and the Wisconsin YAF, Ben Shapiro, is coming to Madison. They have, like, you know, 900 Twitter followers. So this is a dynamic organization, Dom.
Welcome, Ben Shapiro, to Madison, the editor emeritus at the Daily Wire. Stand in line when it's cold out. I'm sure you can get some tickets somewhere. Maybe some scalpers will hook you up.
You know, once upon a time, I feel like I saw a Alex Walker hosted event at the Masonic Temple. It was, I believe, former speaker Paul Ryan. Now there are nothing but former speakers.
They have no speaker.
844-967. I don't know. 2789. Ben Shapiro coming to campus, sold out event, but I got to think there's going to be a few no shows. Wisco Paul, welcome back. How you been, man?
Hey, Paulie.
Hey, happy Friday, Devils. Hey, there's a few things good going on in the Badger game tomorrow. Other than that, hey, you had to invoke Scott Walker's name.
Wanker.
No Rhodes Wanker. Hey, Wanker, you still suck. You totally suck. Hey, I'm going to do a grievance, and it's about the whole GOP. How much suckage could you possibly get the GOP? You got good old Voss wanting to impeach a Wisconsin Supreme Court justice who won by over 11%, I think it was, just because he wants to be the shadow governor. You got the fake electors, and you got Trump out there with his death threats. How much, you know, and then in Congress, boys, they can't even get a speaker. You know, like we don't have two wars going on, plus all this other stuff, like maybe paying bills and stuff. Of course, maybe they're taking notes from this state where you just don't work for like 2 years, you know, and you gavel in, you gavel out. So I don't have a lot of happy news about the GOP today because it's just the whole, it's beyond suck. It's just, I don't, you know, oh, wow.
Hey, so, Wisco.
Other than the Badgers.
Wisco. Go Badgers. But Wisco, are you?
Right.
Yeah.
Are you coming to the Jade
the cool
Monkey?
Thing going on.
Are you partying with the Devil's Advocates next Tuesday?
I am. I'm going to do my darnest to get down there because that's an awesome party, man. Especially the Jade Monkey. That, I mean, that is if you haven't been to one, go to one because it's awesome. So, hey, I got all off my chest today. Thanks a lot, boys. I appreciate it. And
all right, thank you, brother. Appreciate you reaching out. Now, technically, and we do got to clarify here, as Jeff noted, U.S. is not in any official wars right now. It's a lot of other warring going on. We'll support for some folks here, some support for those there, but we are not actively engaged as it stands right now. But I get your gist, man. Thanks for the call.
War on drugs.
They lost that one a long time ago.
Come back with us. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We got our own civic media sports reporter, Mike Clemens. He joins us next with the Brewers update. Go Badgers. Badgers favored by 10 over Iowa. I'm just hoping for a victory. Just give me the W. And stick around. More Devil's Advocates.
Grass-fed, locally raised, 100% organic. The Devil's Advocates.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. If you missed any of this fine program, please go online. Check out civicmedia.us. You can check out the podcasts and the interviews. Look for the Devil's Advocates on the show tab and listen anytime you want. And the Maggie Dawn Show coming up next at 6 o'clock.
And Pizza Box Mike after that. And last game of high school football in many media markets, civic media covers across the state. Middleton won their big game last night. They are heading to the playoffs. We've got our own sports reporter, Mike Clemens, joining us today. Mike, are you sleeping in your own bed, man? Last couple of times we've talked to you, you've been in hotel accommodations.
Hey, finally, Mike. Finally. Hi, guys. How are you? Yeah, actually, last night was the first night. I think I've been home 2 or 3 days, but it started like around July 24th with Packers training camp and then Bucks, and then the Brewers decided to go to the postseason and all that. But pretty big bombshell of a story this afternoon, I guess, with the Brewers pitching, right?
Yeah, let's talk about Brandon Woodruff for just a minute. The Brewers came to an unceremonious 27-hour-long playoff loss, man. It sort of put It undermined the entire long season for me. I got to tell you, Mike, at least in my fanship, but they wouldn't have had a pitcher for day three. Woodruff was sidelined, and now we know it's a lot worse than, a short trip on the IR. Is it not, sir?
Yeah, it's this shoulder injury that popped up, I think it was April 17th, and I think that they were pretty impressed that he was able to come back by August. And then he pitched pretty well in 9 or 10 games. There was one, I think, complete game that he pitched. And then he had one game where the velocity seemed to be off, and they pulled him early. It was a game, I believe, in Miami against the Marlins. And when the next week came up, here they are in the playoffs to take on the Diamondbacks at American Family Field. And the day before, Craig Counsell comes out, and the first thing he says, we don't have Brandon Woodruff for the week. The shoulder injury has popped up again. And he'll be out for this series, if not for the rest of the postseason. And then Brandon came out and talked to reporters the next day. And, he broke down because he thought this team had it. And they've got the pitching. They still got Craig Counsell as a manager. They brought in some of these hitters with the trades that they made. And he, let's give this thing a run. And he was going to miss out on all this. And I guess we should have anticipated then what's happened today. And that was he got a second or third opinion, and he had to go to this Dr. Keith Meister, who's one of the best orthopedic surgeons, particularly for these shoulder injuries for pitchers. He's actually the team physician for the Rangers, and he had the surgery today in Arlington. And then Matt Arnold, the GM, put out a statement about 3 hours ago that said the rehab will at least take out most of 2024, if not the entire season, before he can come back.
Our fine guest, Mike Clemens, sports reporter for Civic Media. Mike, where politics meets baseball, the assembly, the big ballpark plan, now $546 million in renovations to the field I think they've reduced the amount that they're seeking from the community of Milwaukee and the county of Milwaukee. But Mike, next week, and it's going to be a big week to find out whether or not we have long-term plans to keep Wisconsin a major league state, at least in regards to baseball.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, frankly, I haven't followed that much because the guys in the clubhouse aren't talking about it, but I can't imagine that the Brewers getting out the door, right? And it doesn't seem like Attanasio is actually trying to, you know, hang a Charlotte move over the state like Bud Selig did 25 years ago, does it?
No, not so far, but, you know, we shall see.
We shall see. Mike, let me just jump in real quick. Given the circumstances and the situation where we are right now with the Brewers, I mean, what is your sense that this team will be able to hold together in some semblance of what it is now and make another run next year? Or do you think this is going to be a splintering and a rebuilding coming up real soon? What's your sense?
Well, it starts with Craig Counsell, I think, because I think people were taken aback when in August they said, hey, you know, your deal's coming up here at the end of the season. And he said, yeah, we'll talk about that after the season's over with. Okay. But to me, there was always a feeling all summer long at the ballpark that this might be a group that they've put together. They're making a run at it now, and who knows what happens after that. And, you know, if Counsell goes, does Bob Uecker come back at the age of 90 and to work with a new manager? Are they going to clean house and rebuild and bring in a bunch of youngsters? Or are some of the guys that they have brought up, like the Sal Felix and that kind, are they just going to get more playing time? Or, you know, are they going to flip over the books or whatever? Is Corbin Burns going to be back? Would they trade him because maybe they got, you know, their best years out of him? And now with this Woodruff story that it's confirmed he's going to need surgery, and, you know, it won't be until probably 2025 that you get him back. Maybe they have to rethink about that money that they were going to spend on him and try and keep Corbin Burns another year if he wants to stay in Milwaukee. He's got like another year under the team control, as they say. Or do they go with Freddie Peralta and some of the other younger pitchers? And there's still some guys that they've got, you know, in the minor leagues that they're keeping an eye on and very excited about. So they, you know, they churned the roster quite a bit this year, and they made those last-minute trades. So this, the Crownsville thing is definitely for sure. And there's two or three teams in the majors, like the Giants or the Guardians, or the Mets, that we'll probably be hearing about over the next two or three weeks.
Hey, Mike, let's talk a little Badger football. We've got Badgers playing out on our flagship WRJN tomorrow, 3:00, the kickoff, I believe, against Iowa. Badgers, a 10-point favorite. I know we don't talk betting on the air with you, Mike, but do you think the Badgers are going to have a good weekend, sir?
Well, I think they can. I think what you're going to see is a Kirk Ferentz Iowa Hawkeye team that's pretty much going to stick to the running game. They always bring out like an extra tight end. They got this Deacon Hill, who used to be a backup quarterback for the Badgers, but when they had a new coach come out, he's getting only his second start. So windy conditions, I think, you know, they should go with more with Braden Allen, unless Tanner Mordecai throwing the ball downfield.
Well, Rutgers, I was at that game last week, and they won. They finally caught a little momentum, but, man, it took all day for them to get started, Mike. And I worry all these slow starts for the Badgers are going to burn them.
Right. Well, dress warmly tomorrow, folks.
Mike Clemens, our sports reporter, sleeping in his own bed, watching a game on TV, and I hear the Bucks starting very, very soon, so we'll look forward to having those conversations as well. Mike, have a great weekend, all of you. Thank you for listening. Aaron, thanks for filling in for our very capable Nate and very capable Aaron today. And thank you to our friend Jim Santel. Don't forget to tune in Saturday or Sunday mornings for the Morning Cannolis, 9 to 11 a.m. We encourage you all to stick around for Maggie Dawn, the Outside the Pizza Box with Pizza Box Mike, or high school football in many of these civic media markets. Have a great weekend. Go Badgers. Don't forget, stream them. WRJN, our flagship.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Aaron.